images are created to deliver your thoughts, but those are created. Think about the possibilities in life. There's way more possibilities, way more things.
There are.
Than languages, there vocabularies.
Are. There are.
Even though it is a accumulative thing, it's inherited from thousands of years ago, but still, life is way more complicated. Just a flop here
and a flop there. Well, I had the delightful pleasure to sit down and talk to Phoebe about her language learning experience in and outside of China, where she grew up. She is a local from Shanghai, China, and she grew up with Shanghaiese and Mandarin / Putonghua. Learned English when she was 5 years old, then at university learned German, Finnish, Cantonese, Italian, and Latin. Did I mention that her university experience was in Ireland? Or actually, that is the wrong verb tense. It is still happening in Ireland. She is currently doing a PhD program in audio engineering. Yes, she may sound intimidating, but she is one of the most lovely, down-to-earth, kind and gentle people I have ever met. Phoebe and I talked about language and identity, language and accuracy and fluency, and where do you decide where one ends and one begins? And how important is communication? Why do people forget that's the whole reason why we're talking or writing in the first place? Phoebe's perspective coming from Mandarin Chinese into all of these other languages is a gem for me. I'm still very, very much so stuck in learning Mandarin Chinese at a low level, and I will probably someday eventually move on. But hearing someone who speaks so eloquently in supposedly a foreign language is what we call this when she's speaking English. It's a foreign language for her. But honestly, the emotion in her voice and the clear and precise way that she uses the language, I could get lost in her voice easily and I could get lost in her thoughts. So here's Phoebe. Thank you so much, Phoebe, for joining us on the Changing Scripts podcast.
Thank you for inviting me over here.
So, can you give our listeners a quick overview of the languages that you speak, have learned, have studied, any of those?
The foreign language I've learned is obviously English. I'm native Shanghainese. And I've learned German and a little bit of Italian at the moment, Finnish, and Cantonese, if that counts as a language.
It does. I think it does. Does it?
I think so.
Yeah.
If I'm not politically wrong.
Well, the sound system is very different than Shanghai's or Putonghua, right?
Same. Same as grammar. They have different grammar systems.
Right, right. Okay, so yes, that counts. Uh-huh. And you're native language or languages?
I would say Shanghainese because I was born in Shanghai, but I speak Mandarin. That's the language I was taught.
Oh my gosh, that's quite an array of languages you've got there.
For us, it's very normal, but yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's break this down. Let's start as little Phoebe. When you were growing, you grew up in Shanghai, right?
Right.
That's what you said. Okay. So when you were growing up in Shanghai, you use Shanghaiese at home,
mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay.
Mostly.
Mostly. And what else were you using at home?
Mandarin
and Shanghaiese.
Yes.
Okay. Did everybody in the household speak Shanghaiese and Putonghua?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Both of them, but for the older generation, their Mandarin isn't that good, so they might speak, they might use not so authentic Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And, when you started school, did they use Shanghaiese in schools?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because in schools here, we have to show respect to everybody. And Shanghai is a very multicultural city. So we're literally not allowed to use Shanghaiese because that would show exclusiveness.
Right. Okay.
That's one of the concerns of the younger generation right now, because people said if Shanghainese is not allowed, people are concerned that language is dying.
Right.
If you don't speak that in school, then kids wouldn't, if their parents are busy, they wouldn't have any chance to practice speaking Shanghainese.
Exactly, because they spend so much time at school that if they don't use it there, where do they use it?
Yeah.
Whereas normally I'll talk on the street. I have no problem with noise. I'll be just like blah, 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 blah. So anyway, okay, so let's just keep going. Okay, so when you went to school, Mandarin or Putonghua Mandarin, yes. Chinese was the
yes.
I swear the roof's gonna cave in at some point too. That was the language of instruction. And when did you learn your first first foreign language?
Oh, I started very, very early since I was in kindergarten. I went to it's not bilingual, but they started to teach us English songs and English, I don't know, English storytelling from very young. I didn't know the meaning of that at all. Mm-hmm. I was very keen on acting them out, just mimicking whatever the teacher was doing, you know? Quite enjoy that. I started learning English since I was possibly 5 years old. That was a way ahead of the proper kind of age you're required to learn English in Shanghai.
That's a beautiful age to learn a foreign language.
Even though I don't know the meaning and I don't know how to translate the grammar or anything.
Yeah. But you said that the teacher was like acting out the story.
Yes,
so you were getting a physical connection to the meaning of the words.
Yes. And I started to appreciate the, how to say, prosody of that language itself. I like the rhythm. I like how it pronounced. That's the first connection I had with English.
You do study sound. Oh my gosh, you're going to have to define that for our listeners. Some of them study linguistics, but a lot of them aren't familiar with all the terms. Can you explain to them very simply what prosody is?
Oh, probably by the time I publish my first paper.
Stay tuned, folks.
To put it in a simple way, I don't know. How to say that? It's your first instinct or intuitive response or appreciation of particular sound of a language without thinking about the meaning. You simply appreciate the sound, the how. The very fundamental the very basic level of particular sound without putting into any semantic or syntactic structure into the processing of the... Sorry, I'm becoming very academic, but just how you process, how your brain react to language.
Is it... I have to admit, in grad school, I studied more writing than I did sound. Prosody. I can't even spell it at this point. Prosity. It sounds like the emotional connection with the language. Is that
kind of
false?
And also the different features and characteristic, like different phonemes and the rhythms. Like in Italian, you got intonations within each word.
Right.
And when we're speaking English, we have intonation in the sentences. When you read poems or you read some sentences, you usually have something. In Chinese, we call it ya yin, something with the same consonant or vowels. It contains those patterns. Even if for people who don't know that language, they would start to feel, oh, there's something repetitive, there are some rules, there's something beautiful out there.
Right. Yeah. Because all languages have like a set of sounds that they use, and they just keep rearranging how they're used, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So this is a good time to introduce your background and what you're studying right now, I think, because that'll give the listeners
That's
a little
really
bit of...
hard to define. I'm a researcher in sound.
There you go. Yeah. So Phoebe is very, very keenly aware of audio sounds and language sounds and all of that kind of stuff, which is so amazing to me.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so let's see. So English at, 5 years old. Other than singing songs and kind of doing the movement to go with them, what other ways were you taught the language?
Oh, after my kindergarten period, I just follow what everybody else did in school.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Okay,
I kind of do, but the listeners might not. So can you describe that?
We have compulsory English classes. Mm-hmm. It carries the same equivalent importance as Chinese mm-hmm. mathematics mm-hmm. and physics, something like that. And you just take classes for credits, and then you answer questions, pass exams.
Can we zoom in on the English language classroom in elementary school? What happened? Was it the teacher describing the language, or were you using it? Was there talking? Was there listening? Like, can you give us a little snapshot of
what the... Every language study got reading, listening, writing, mm-hmm. and what's the other?
Speaking.
Yes, and you got exams on all of them.
I gotcha. Okay.
And you do simply you accumulate vocabularies, and you were taught different rules of grammar, and then you do exercise.
Gotcha. So there was a fair amount of speaking in the classroom.
Not really.
Okay, so it's more the listening, reading, and writing.
Yeah.
That seemed to be the case globally. Even in communicative classrooms, it uh-huh. still seems to be a lot of those,
because
especially in larger
classrooms. Teacher and student ratios.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah. Because if you have 30 and 40 people, it's very difficult and noisy to yeah. have conversation groups.
Even if you're asked to pair up with your... mm-hmm. Classmates, mm-hmm. you are simply using something the other person would understand.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. When did German come into the mix?
Oh, that's not until I entered university.
Oh, okay.
So I felt like after I started my bachelor's degree in Ireland, mm-hmm. I started a whole new journey of learning languages, including Chinese, English, and all the other languages I picked up.
Okay, so you moved to Ireland and started learning German.
And English.
And Chinese. Okay. Wow. Okay, wait, did you learn all of those at the same time?
I picked them up one after another, but quite quickly mm-hmm. after I mastered one. After I've turned into new ways of learning mm-hmm. languages.
Oh, what new ways?
Because I found, I before I went to Ireland to study, I feel like all the effort I spent most of my life, I spent all of my life studying mm. English, which was not that effective.
Mm.
And then I found out, probably I should change to a new way of learning different languages. After I pick up German mm-hmm. and a little bit of Italian. Oh, also a little bit of Latin. I found there's actually connections between different languages.
Sure.
If you understand where that come from, then you will understand a lot of things a lot deeper. And also my experience of studying in Ireland made me more tolerant of mm-hmm. language itself, because mm-hmm. I met lots of people, they speak English natively, but they're from different places, like mm-hmm. Indian and Australian, American, British people, Irish mm-hmm. people. All of them speak English very confidently, but the way they deliver, the way they articulate is all different.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wouldn't stick to the very harsh single rule of what is correct, what is not correct. I would just pick whichever, both like pronunciation or grammar, mm-hmm. I would just choose the one I feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever people are talking to me in English, I'm more tolerant. I wouldn't just take out the grammar mistakes. I'm very uncomfortable to hear anything that's not proper from the textbook.
Sure. Yeah, it is a shock the first few times you hear different varieties of English.
Yeah.
And again, from someone who's very, very fluent and knows exactly what they're saying, and a lot of people can understand them, and it's like, wait, why don't I understand them?
Exactly.
I remember the first time I went to Scotland, mm-hmm. I had to seriously adjust to the accent
mm-hmm.
and the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And Not so much with Australia, because they mostly just shorten things, so that wasn't too bad. Mm-hmm. But there were some, there's some Cockney rhyming slang in the UK that some of my coworkers abroad in Asia would use, and I'd just be like, I can't, I just don't know what you guys are saying. Like, I understand we have a common language, this is not it. Now, there must be varieties of Chinese as well.
Yeah, yeah. Within China, yes. Mm-hmm. And even for people from like Southeast Asian countries, mm-hmm. Like Malaysian Chinese and right. Singapore Chinese, and some of my friends from Taiwan, mm-hmm. we all speak Chinese, mm-hmm. but we understand each other, mm-hmm. but there are obvious difference in the usage of different
sure.
words,
sure.
vocabularies, and sentence structure even. When I realized that, then I become more tolerant of mm-hmm. my usage of English. I was really, really harsh on myself. Oh, I'm not grammatically perfect. I haven't studied English well enough.
That's awesome. Yeah, the ability to kind of ask and get clarification on things and go back and forth mm-hmm. becomes much more important than the perfect grammar and the perfect vocabulary at that point. Because mm-hmm. even, like you said, even native speakers are speaking different versions of the language.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, very, very cool. Where are we? German, Finnish. Why Finnish?
Because I'm going to go to Finland for a short conference thing.
Oh, that's so cool. Mother-daughter, Pia, this Finnish woman that was in Shanghai. Hi, Pia! Was in Shanghai with her daughter, Lota. Pia was a woman I met when her family moved because of her husband's job to Shanghai, mm-hmm. and her daughter Lota and her other daughter, who I never met, came here, and Lota was studying Chinese, and Pia was studying Chinese a little bit and mostly just exploring like crazy. She was having such a good time, and I interviewed Lota for Expat Rewind, which is now Bookish Expats, and Lota I actually interviewed for this podcast, Changing Scripts.
I did a lot of travel in mm-hmm. within European kind of area. Mm-hmm. Wherever I went to, I wanted to speak the local language. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use English all the time. So after I pick up German, I traveled to all the German-speaking area.
Wow, all? You said all? Really?
Most of the German-speaking area, including Switzerland. Yeah. The only German-speaking part of
right.
the Switzerland and Austria. Mm-hmm. After I pick up some other languages, mm-hmm. probably I'll visit more places.
Why did you want to go to so many places there? Did you want to hear the varieties of it? Or?
Yeah, I just wanted to explore, pick up different mindsets, mm-hmm. and then see, because within Europe, it's you take a bus 1 hour and it'll send you to a totally new country. Mm-hmm. People speak totally different languages, and then yep. they have different mindsets, and mm-hmm. they have different tradition, which is, wow, awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only mm-hmm. 1 hour you don't.
I know. As someone from China and someone from the U.S., for us, yeah. it's like, you have to fly.
Exactly.
You have
yes.
to. I mean, yeah, I could go up to Canada, and that's a little different. But, sorry, Canadians, but let's be real. It's not insanely different, like a different country. That's not a different language, except for the A thing that they do. But no, the drastic cultural changes in Europe, mm-hmm. especially from West to Eastern Europe, it's really different. It's so close to each other.
Yeah. I also feel like if I don't speak local language, I wouldn't mm-hmm. get the most out of that place. Mm-hmm. Because people wouldn't be so keen on showing what's authentic over there. You have to, even if you're not fluent, you have to show some effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, okay, wait, let's go back to little Phoebe first. Most people have an affinity towards one part of a language versus another when they're growing up. For example, I loved to read when I was growing up. Some people liked speaking or they liked listening to certain things. Mm-hmm. What was your happy place in language as a child?
I would say reading things out loud. Mm-hmm. The first attachment I had with English is prosody, and same as mm-hmm. Chinese, because my mom, she encouraged me to read poems, mm-hmm. and then she's a very voice person. She likes me. She taught me to read things emotionally from very young age,
yeah.
before I could actually read mm-hmm. stuff. So I really enjoy listening to people reading mm-hmm. stories and poems. After I can read a little bit of Pinyin, mm-hmm. I started to read things by myself and act it out So for all languages, I just love hearing those languages.
Yeah.
I love hearing those sounds.
Me too, me too. There were, now that I'm thinking about, I'm a little bit older than you. So when I was growing up, like, I didn't get the internet. The internet was not common until I was almost out of university. And so when I was growing up, we had, record players and tape players later on. So audio stuff to go with the readings wasn't super common yet. So I kind of had the voices going on in my head. And I think, because I love audiobooks and podcasts now, so I can only imagine if I was a kid with all of that stuff, nobody would ever see me. I'd be like, I'm in my room, I'm going to listen to a million things today, bye.
That's why I was so attracted to your podcast. Mm. Because I just simply love your voice.
Oh my God, thank you. I have issues. I've talked about this on the YouTube channel of the Changing Scripts. Because I have immigrant parents from Italy, and I grew up in New York and Pennsylvania, and then I moved to California, I have a weird mix of vocal characteristics. I seem like I have a flat tone, but I've got really weird intonation for someone who has a flat tone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not a huge deal until I hit some sound people that only want that flat tone with no weirdness. I've had people literally want me to repeat stuff. Like if they were interviewing me, they want me to repeat a phrase because it didn't sound as normal as it should. And I said, yes, but I'm on your podcast as a guest. This is me.
Exactly.
This is how I sound.
That sounds pleasant.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's very nice of you. I'm like, no, I do make lots of mistakes, but that was not a mistake. That was my intonation.
Just the way people express.
Yeah. But because it's a little different, and it's not like standard, super flat, not like, I have a little bit of my parents' influence, a little bit of New York influence. Very subtle, but it's there. And for the very fine-tuned ear, it throws them off, and they're like, oh, it's not standard enough. I'm like, ah, how did I get on this? how did I have this experience? So it's a little... Thank you, is
not
what I meant to say.
It has to be BBC or CNN standards.
I know. And even on the local news, because we call it like very, very standard English. We call it like newscaster English.
Oh.
That very, very flat, you can't tell where someone's from. But even on the local news channels, you'll hear different accents.
Right.
So it's not even...
Yeah.
Libraries or bookstores. When you were growing up, did you go to libraries or bookstores very often?
Not really, to tell the truth, but I really love bookstores and libraries.
Mm-hmm. So where did you get the stuff you were reading?
Yeah, from the bookstores, usually.
Ah, okay,
yeah,
okay.
From bookstores.
So more bookstores than libraries.
But at that time, there aren't as many as right now.
Yeah.
I really like the bookstores right now in Shanghai.
Yeah.
I love them.
They're beautiful.
I just spent days and
weeks,
my holidays. Like, I want to live there.
What's your favorite, for the listeners that might come to Shanghai to visit, what's your favorite bookstore?
Compared to some of the bookstores outside of Shanghai, I would prefer some outside of Shanghai.
Okay, can we give them one in and one out of Shanghai?
The 24-hour ones in Guangzhou, which is really, really awesome.
There's 24-hour bookstores in Guangzhou.
Yes.
What? Do we have names of a bookstore
it's
that you're talking
called,
about?
If I'm not wrong, it's called 1200 Hours. And they even have Airbnb in that.
In the bookstore?
Yes.
I did not know until this very moment that
and
I wanted to sleep
down,
in a bookstore. And
they
I
shut
do.
Down the Wi-Fi. They told you be early.
Oh my God, I love this place.
I love it.
I see why you had a hard time picking just one in Shanghai. But if you had to, in a false world where you were restricted just to Shanghai, what would you say is your favorite bookstore here? Let's do it in two categories. One, just for books.
I missed one. It used to be underneath the Shanghai Library.
Yes. It is. It's still technically a bookstore, but it's not.
Not the same.
It's not. They've really remodeled it.
I really
it.
Love the collection.
Yeah.
There.
That was a very cool one. Yeah.
I don't like the very trendy ones, to tell the truth, but
yeah.
it's good to go there every once in a while, but...
Jeremy Tiang is a writer-translator, like, all-around word badass, and he was on the show a few months ago, and he's from Singapore, grew up with English, speaks Mandarin Chinese. I don't remember if he speaks Cantonese. He's got a lot of languages at his disposal, and he plays with languages for a living. And he wanted to know, this is his question, he wanted to know what people felt, what language they felt they had ownership over, what language they felt was theirs. Because sometimes when we learn a language, we feel like, okay, I can use it, but it's not really my culture, it's not really my mine. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to know what language people considered their language.
Any language that's within the realm of your specialty. Like
for you.
Your profession.
What languages do you feel that you own?
It depends on what I'm talking about.
Oh!
I'm talking about sound or academics, probably English, because I learn everything. I could deliver all the concepts and different things in English more confidently if I'm talking about Asian literature or, I don't know, any other things or family issues or daily lives, probably Chinese or in some other situations. And I wouldn't say I would have the feeling of having an ownership of any languages, because for me, moving from one place to another, switching language for me is quite difficult. Sometimes I'm actively searching for one word to represent my thoughts, and I always felt, and it depends on the confidence of delivering your thoughts in different realms.
Right.
And I would say for a lot of friends around me, they always have like identity issues, especially for those who's coming from very complicated family.
Right.
And some of them, they told me they would dream in one language and they deliver a speech in another language, or they could dream in several different languages. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about something philosophical or something related to your value system, I don't think language itself could align perfectly with what you're thinking. That's why we need gestures and languages beyond the spoken ones.
Exactly.
Beyond the exact ones, so that people actually can communicate their thoughts by indicating their behaviors and different, nuanced signature or indicators, I would say. Language is a defined system.
Yeah.
And I would never want to own in a language, and I'm not in pursuit of any languages right now. Before that, before I entered college, I always pursuing fluency or, I don't know, ownership or mastery of one language, at least English, but now articulating your idea to another person, even though your common language is different or the mastery level of a common language is different, as long as you can make the other understand, then it's fine.
That is fluency, and that is exactly what I agree with you 9,000,000%, and that's not even a percentage. I think so many people get caught up in having it come out perfectly that they don't communicate, and they don't make those connections, and I think that it stops something beautiful that could happen.
Yeah,
so that's really cool. But yeah, it is an identity thing, and you have me thinking, because I grew up monolingual despite having parents that were bilingual, and I've always been slightly jealous that despite trying to learn different languages, I understand that is not my strongest cognitive skill. That's fine. I have other ones. I'm good. I will continue to try, and hopefully at some point I'll get to fluency in some language, hopefully Mandarin. But I do put people who grow up with multiple languages a bit on a pedestal. And I think, what a glorious life that must be. But after reading about like third culture kids lately and the complications that come with having multiple cultures and multiple languages, I'm beginning to rethink the admiration. And I'm wondering if it makes it more complicated. Do you think growing up with multiple languages opens up a lot of things or makes life more complicated?
I personally don't have an experience like that, so I don't really know. I can't really comment on that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I kind of quite often switch from one language to another.
Mm-hmm.
It does complicate things. In some way, helps you to find the connections between different languages. And there's connections between even Eastern languages and Western languages.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're quite more tolerant. Mm-hmm. And then you understand the other a lot better if you can tell what's the origin of language and why people use mm-hmm. the sentence structure like that. Yeah, and due to different structures of rules of grammar, mm-hmm. and then you can tell why people think this way, why people prioritize one
mm-hmm.
to another, because the way they speak.
Like, you were using English in China, but it sounds like you really, really became comfortable using English when you moved to Ireland.
Not really, actually.
Really?
To tell the truth, no.
Wait, do you feel like you're still not at a comfort level?
No, not at all.
What? To me, you sound amazingly fluent. It doesn't seem like you don't understand. That's such a double negative. Let me try that again. It seems like you understand everything and you're just going back and forth so quickly and easily.
That's because I was talking to you. You made me so comfortable.
Oh my God. You still feel slightly uncomfortable in speaking English.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
All the time.
No, I can only imagine how hard that is.
Hi, I'm Tanya Crossman. I'm a cross-cultural consultant working with international schools and other international organizations, but I'm most well known as the author of Misunderstood, The Impact of Growing Up Overseas in the 21st Century. In Misunderstood, I explore how growing up between countries and cultures and languages impacts the way a young person sees and understands and experiences the world around them, and how this different experience can create tension or misunderstandings between them and friends and family who didn't share that same cross-cultural childhood experience. I wrote it partly for young people who grew up this way to see that it's not just me, I'm not the only one, other people feel the same way I do, and I make sense in this context. But I also wrote it for parents who felt anxious and stressed and even guilty for bringing their kids overseas and worrying what this was going to do to their kids long term. So I interviewed and surveyed hundreds and hundreds of TCKs about their experiences so I can say to parents, look, I don't know what your specific kid's going through, but here's what hundreds of other kids in similar situations have said about their experiences. The book is full of their stories, what's helped them and what hasn't, what support they need from the adults in their lives. I love talking about this stuff. I love talking to parents, to TCKs, to anyone in this cross-cultural world. So you'll find me all over social media. I'm on Twitter as Tanya TCK. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Misunderstood TCK, and my website is misunderstoodbook.com. Misunderstood is available as a paperback and an ebook pretty much everywhere online.
I can't. Yeah, I should use some of my Mandarin now so you can understand how bad
when
and how impossible it is for me to I will. Okay, so like the word I, mm-hmm. wo, I need wo, I still have problems with that.
Oh.
I generally can't build sentences. I know words. That's as far as I've gotten. But that even in a sentence, wo, I mean wo.
What do you think the problem is? Why do you think it's problematic, or is that
because it's so far back in the throat?
Okay,
so English is very, very much here.
So you're thinking about the position.
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
So how far apart is your pronunciation from a local person?
Oh, from a local? Oh,
yeah.
Probably night and day. You tell me.
I don't know, because every Chinese they speak, they say a word in different ways. I can't understand.
And maybe that's some of the problem. Because even street names,
yes.
I'll say to many different people. Okay, taxi drivers, I understand they're from different parts of the country. And so there's a natural disconnect there. But even people who say they're from Shanghai and I'm talking about different street names will still have to, like, tone it out back and forth, back and forth,
right.
back and forth, till we have the same place.
Right.
Okay.
So I don't
maybe that's
understand
part
why you think it's a problem. Talk to every Chinese. they speak differently.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it then. Maybe I am thinking there is a way, because I still get a little confusion when I try to use the language, and the little that I can use, there's a lot of confusion, and I don't have enough navigation language to say it a different way, to ask them what part was confusing. Like, I can't navigate back and forth to figure out what went wrong in what I said.
Okay.
And so it's either, here's what I want to say, and if it falls apart, I just stare at it.
For native language speakers, we don't know the correct way to pronounce it, because we didn't study that. We didn't study the position where you should put your tongues and then your...
What? Okay, wait, you did...
But everybody, think about the way you study English.
Yeah.
You just learn by mimicking everything you heard.
We were taught sounds extensively. Yeah.
I might be wrong, but it's not in my memory.
No. Well, we're also different generations.
So, we're the same. I still listen to tape and then recordings, so we're in the same generation. Okay.
No, but even my husband, who's only 8 years younger than me, he has a very different educational experience. So in my generation, in the U.S., on the East Coast, they taught sounds very explicitly. We had posters. We would practice individual sounds and then words and then stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
We would look stuff up in dictionaries and read the phonetics.
Wow.
Yeah, so we were taught that. We were also taught grammar. We used to have to circle, underline, like really identify the parts of speech. His generation didn't do it. So they're even in the U.S.
But he speaks proper English, and you find English.
He's from Idaho.
Oh, I get that.
Proper. Define proper. We both can speak proper English when we want to, but we had a very different experience learning English in the U.S.
I see.
Yeah.
Similar applies to Chinese. And for people who are not taught in the strict way to pronounce, but we still... pronounce correctly,
right,
and people understand each other.
Right.
We wouldn't think, oh, you're not a native language speaker. Why? Even though people speak different, the same word with different variation, because people from the same place, they would group things that sound similar. Mm-hmm. Oh, in machine learning, we said categorization. It's a categorization. You have a range. You have a huge sample, and you categorize them as you label those as the same category.
Right.
So if you, as long as you do not lie outside of that range, you're within the correct zone.
Sure.
And so for you, I would say, because everybody speaks slightly differently, you just pick the one you appreciate the most, or pick the group of people, a group of pronunciation, because people from Shanghai and people from the northern area, everywhere,
so different.
So you just pick the one you appreciate the most, and then mimic them.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you pronounce wrong if you pick another group.
Agreed. But for months, I was saying, because it's W-O in pinyin, I was saying whoa. Whoa, and very in the front of my mouth.
Whoa.
And people were like, really, huh? And then I realized I didn't even need to use it most of the time. So then I just stopped using the word, because a lot of times you can pro-drop, so it's no big deal. So anyway, that's just one word. So I appreciate you coming on and being uncomfortable during this whole thing. I don't want you to be.
Oh, another thing to mention is when you pronounce... When you learn a foreign language, you usually learn it based on what you've learned before.
Yes.
Machine learning we use transfer learning, use your past experience. Like you have a wow sound in English, then you probably, when you hear people in Chinese say, wow, you would say, you would relate that pronunciation to something you've learned, but probably you don't have that word or alternative like
I agree
in English, but you would find something similar enough to replace that. That's where the problem
I agree. I think British English has more of a wall than we do in American English.
I
think we're much more in the front on that, because they do the like the R, you know, the what's it called, the rhotic R, they would drop that and they'd be like wah wah They have more of that. I can't do it right because I can't do a British accent to save my life. But they have much more of the that A that almost sounds like R. They have that, and that's kind of a little deeper. But in American English, we don't, and we overpronounce sometimes the R, so it's a little tricky. But that was just one example of just on some of the sounds that we don't have. It's tricky, but just in general, it's, yeah.
So for me, a lot of people gave me advice as saying do not stick to the correct pronunciation, because for me, when I was learning German, people think German, they speak differently, you don't have to stick to the ach.
Yeah.
And they said even German, a lot of them couldn't pronounce
it.
It's so true. They said just, you don't have to spend hours and hours, it depends on the people. But they said you don't have to stick to the pronunciation class for like 18 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Learn the position and everything.
Yeah. Just
keep on mimicking and find the difference. And then every time you mimic them, you become a step closer. And then the more you mimic, the better you become, or the closer you become to the one that you appreciate.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the disservices that's done in classes in China that where people are teaching foreigners Mandarin Chinese, is they spend so much time on the tones at first. And it's like, I think a good, like, maybe a week would be good. So you get an idea of the tones, you start to hear the differences a little bit, but then you need vocabulary. You just need a ton of vocabulary, a ton of writing. You need to get in there and you need to get some actual language.
Right.
But they spend so much time on getting the tones perfect. And I've had so many people tell me, when in doubt, speak fast, use third tone. Because the tones change when you put other things next to it sometimes. So it's like you think you know it perfectly one individually, and it's with something else and it changes, and you're supposed to remember that? Nobody learns that even in the first language. Yeah, so it's
no.
So speaking quickly is one of the things that I adopted.
When people ask me how to learn German, what are some listening resources, I said anything except for the slow German.
Yeah.
Do not listen to the slow ones. Well, it might apply for some, but no,
my expat friends in Germany tell me that Germans dub everything in German on TV and in movies. So there must be a lot of resources to hear German.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That might actually come in handy. I am going to jinx myself now, but I'm looking for work in Germany, and I'm really hoping that I have to learn German soon. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Pick the accent you appreciate first.
I don't care. Honestly, I'm ready for my first case language. Although I studied German in high school.
Awesome.
But by studied, I mean I went to the class and I hated the book. So I barely passed the class, and I didn't have a love affair with words yet.
Uh-huh.
So it was a very different experience. And my German teacher in high school, how should I put this? I don't think she liked people. Yeah, so it made a big dent on me. But nah, everybody has their own reasons why they do things. So what languages do you think in? Like, okay, it sounds like when you're doing your sound research, you're thinking in English, I think, right?
Mm, yeah.
When you're having an emotional moment, are you thinking in Mandarin or Shanghaiese or...
When I'm thinking, I'm not using any languages.
You're not using any language?
No, I don't think so.
Because
thoughts are really, really abstract and personal. And I don't think words or any language is versatile enough to replicate people's thoughts. So languages are created to deliver your thoughts, but those are created. Think about the possibilities in life. There's way more possibilities, way more things.
There are.
Than languages, there vocabularies.
Are. There are.
Even though it is a accumulative thing, it's inherited from thousands of years ago, but still, life is way more complicated.
The problem, Phoebe, is that I see language as I'm thinking it.
Uh-huh.
And because I'm such a visual person.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, if I'm thinking something, I'm kind of like reading it on a page in my mind.
I see.
It's very, very strange. I don't know if there's even a word for that. But so for me, it sounds very cool to experience an emotion without, or a thought, without there being a word attached to it. That sounds cool.
I'm not 100% sure, because probably when I'm thinking deeply, I'm not aware of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And my flatmates, they usually pointed out, "Baby, why are you talking to yourself in English?" They're so surprised to see a Chinese talking to herself in English, unconsciously. But still, I talk to myself in Chinese sometimes.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's what my parents told me. I'm not aware of that at all.
That's so funny.
And sometimes I would use German.
I stopped at HSK 3. There's like 6 levels of HSK test, right? The formal Chinese language test. I stopped at 3, but I barely passed it. So I'm probably like a strong HSK 2, which basically means I can read 300 words, which is really little. But in sentences, when I was trying to say a full thought to someone, because I studied Spanish a little bit, and I used Spanish when I traveled in Latin America and when I dated in Latin America. And so I have an interesting vocabulary in Spanish. So when I'm trying to say something and I don't have the Chinese word for it, Spanish comes in, because it's not English. It's the other part of my brain. Does that happen to you?
Yeah. Depends on your experience, where you acquire that experience.
Yeah.
In what situation you acquire that experience,
then
you would find the proper or the initial kind of language or vocabularies, regardless of the language you're using.
Have you ever studied linguistics?
No, but that's always something I wanted to learn.
It feels like you have studied linguistics because you're so
not properly, but that was on my list when I was applying for colleges.
So what did you spend your undergrad studying?
Economics and sociology.
Wow.
So I'm still a social science person.
Right. And then did you get master's, or are you doing master's and PhD together?
I did a master's and then PhD.
What was your master's in?
Electronic engineering.
Oh my goodness.
Right now.
I adore you so much. You make sense to me. Growing up, I was very strong in the arts and music and writing, reading, all that kind of stuff. I loved it. Theater, loved it. But I wanted something challenging, so I just started taking lots of classes at university.
Yes.
And I fell in love with chemistry, but I couldn't see myself in a lab. And now I know it's much more interactive than that, but I just really couldn't see myself that alone. So I was like, eh. So then I saw the engineers, and I saw how interactive engineering was. Oh, but I wasn't good enough in the math to be one engineering. So we had like this business engineering degree where we did a bunch of different kinds of engineering and a lot of business classes. And so I took that for my undergrad, and it was beautiful. But then I started teaching overseas. So my master's, like, I have business engineering for my undergrad, teaching English is my master's, and part of a combination of the two, actually. Yeah. It was a program that was teaching English through technology.
Wow.
So it was like combining the two.
It's a beautiful transition.
But I didn't finish it.
That's great. So, you got the best out of those programs.
But I love switching subjects.
Yeah, same here.
Do you learn in these languages?
Learn what?
Because it sounds like you like to explore and you like to learn new things.
Yes.
Are you doing that in languages other than Chinese and English? Like, are you reading things to learn information in German and Finnish?
Yeah, I read Italian. German and newspapers, and then when I was very into philosophy, I did read philosophy books.
Really?
German, very
back in. Wow. Which philosophers did you read?
Kant.
You read Kant in the original language.
That's painful.
Oh, it's painful in translation, too.
And my friends told me, you'll never get it. Trust me. Stop thinking about it.
That's... Why did you pick him of all the philosophers?
Oh, that's available. The only course that's offered. And people said the translation is very, very different if you read the English and the German.
Mm-hmm.
If you know German, try the ones, but they guarantee I wouldn't understand him.
But you did.
I tried.
When you were reading it, did you have like a Chinese or an English translation nearby that you could kind of look at if you got stuck?
I had an English version nearby, but I never opened it.
Wow. I am tipping my hat to you, and I'm not even wearing a hat. And that was a class that you took it for?
Yeah. That the TA was very, very frustrated, because every time I went to the tutorial, I literally turned that into a language class.
Yeah.
I asked him, I was using German, but I asked him, what does that mean? What does this word mean? What's different from the English alternative.
Right.
Yeah.
Although I had to take a philosophy class for my undergrad, and Kant was one of the people that we studied.
Uh-huh.
And even in the translation, I still felt like it was partially a language class. Because
yes.
Philosophers, you know, they have to define things and group things and deeply dig into things. So they're kind of making up words and ideas anyway.
And also when I was studying the contemporary music and the contemporary like sound music or sound design movement, the avant-garde ones are mostly in Germany, either Germany or France. So I had no choice but to read the original German or French transcript. I gave up all the French ones.
Right.
I don't have any basic kind of background in that.
Right.
But for the German ones, I really tried hard.
That's amazing. I don't think we've talked about your learning process, because you said you learn languages differently after you arrived in Ireland and stuff. You learn languages differently than you used to.
Mm-hmm.
What is your process? How do you learn these languages?
I started from a experiment, trying not to translate things.
Mm-hmm.
I found translating things probably made it very inefficient. Throughout my childhood, I was taught in a very strict way, so you have to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
After I entered college, I figured out I could never finish any reading list, even though the highlighted ones, because I paid too much attention
mm-hmm.
on the sentence structure, and then looking at the word I didn't know, because that's the kind of the learning habit I cultivated throughout
mm-hmm.
the year,
mm-hmm.
and I found that really inhibited my ability to acquire knowledge, because
mm-hmm.
I read everything in English. I treat those transcripts as a English learning material
mm-hmm.
instead of a textbook or anything
right.
informative.
So it's mostly through reading things that you're learning these languages?
Reading and listening.
Okay.
So after that, I forced myself not to look into the dictionary and then read really, really fast
right,
and
right.
do not analyze the sentence structure or grammar or anything. Just grasp the impression of that.
Yeah.
Don't look into the details of the language.
I love that. To grasp the impression of that.
I really forced myself because I had that ability like for 10 years at least, because
mm-hmm.
that's something English teacher required us mm-hmm. to do, and I really grasped the benefit out of that. I always the best English.
Mm-hmm.
I ranked really, really high in my English classes
yeah.
in Shanghai because I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I read everything in detail. After I entered college, I
mm-hmm.
found, oh, wow, no, I shouldn't treat English text like that.
Yeah.
I should really be tolerant on the English.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when I pick up German, I kind of stop going into too much details. And I didn't take any, like, English taught. I started learning German using German only. I don't use any, like we call them like aid language or some
graded language.
Yeah,
or, yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I don't use translation. Just force myself to read, and then gradually. I think the first difficulty you have to tackle is the barrier in your mind. Think, I'm reading a new language.
Mm-hmm.
It should be slow because I'm very bad. Once you've overcome that set, when you open up, you try all means to understand the meaning. You look at people when they talk to you
mm-hmm.
attentively.
Yeah.
Take wild guess. Try to see what they're intending to deliver.
Sure.
Then you will understand them.
Yeah.
Once I get what they mean from a very initial state, then I build my confidence. Yes, I could communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
At least I can understand them, even if I can't speak any of their native language. After that, I force myself to read newspapers, and then my ability of guessing the meaning of words
mm-hmm.
become a lot better.
Because you started to notice the frequently used words, and so those got
Absolutely.
Those started to help you. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very hard process for me. Because you have to overwrite your old habit, but you really gain the feeling of the language,
mm-hmm.
and then you can start it to speak some of the most frequently used ones,
sure.
phrases, almost naturally, like a native.
So you started learning English very young. Yeah. When you switched and started learning German, was there any one thing that was really hard to get used to?
Just my old habit of going into the details and figuring out why people say it in this way. What's the rule of that? I had to stop asking myself these questions. These are good, but
that's so hard. That's something
I have to stop doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The why is very hard not to ask.
Yes.
Yes.
That's not how a language is built.
I know. It's not. Most languages are not logical. Although I've heard German is more logical than English.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Does it feel like it's more logical? Yes.
I think it's very, very logical.
Yeah. I think English has more exceptions. Mm-hmm. Than yeah.
But throughout the stage, in the academic English, when we are correcting people's essays and things, my advisors always taught me the difference between British English and American English. But when we look into like different books and guidance, they differentiated the two, but at the same time they said, oh wow, in modern American English, people kind of use both. In British English right now,
they're starting to use some Americanisms.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of the phrases are acceptable, becoming acceptable today. So,
and
do we really have to differentiate?
Exactly. And oh gosh, who was it? There used to be this terminology of like inner circle, outer circle, and inner circle with the like the American English, Australian English, British English, all the white Englishes were inside, and then everybody else, like India and Singapore, Malaysia, all of those people would be like on the outside. And it's like, why are we putting this us them thing with the language?
Right,
if people use the language, they use the language, and they are included in people that use the language. Yeah,
it's a dynamic thing.
So saying there's British English and American English leaves out a lot of people that use the language fluently and natively.
Yeah.
Like they grow up, that's their main language.
And I wouldn't be confident saying my Chinese is correct, because sometimes I just use things in a kind of clever way, which is possibly, very likely, grammatically wrong.
Oh, but it's so much fun to play with language that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I make up blends all the time.
Using that.
Oh, my favorite blend in English was from a linguistics class I took, where the professor, he came in and he decided he wanted to talk about blends that day. And he's like, my favorite one is confidence. And it's like confidence and coffee.
Wow.
The confidence you get from coffee. And I'm like, I love you. You're wonderful. This is a class. I spend my entire life making up blends all the time. And I'm like, I get to study this today? Yes. No, playing with the language is beautiful. That's what we do as humans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good morning, you beautiful ladies and gentlemen. If you're not indifferent to the video games as a medium, as art, or just as a way of spending time, you probably know how good games are a rare commodity lately. I notice it too. And here in Duck in Games podcast, we try to dig deeper into the understanding of video game design, so that more people will know about good and bad game design practices. And maybe one day there will be more good games because someone knew those practices. Or at the very least, people will stop spending hard-earned money on bad games. So, see you around, guys!
So, well, okay, as you've been learning different languages, do you feel like you've lost any of the other languages you knew better?
Yeah, my parents pointed out, whenever I write everything in Chinese, they said, oh, if they can tell my sentence structures, sounds a bit awkward.
Really?
It's not as natural as if you put them in English.
Right.
A lot of the structures that you said, it's very English structured.
Oh, so your grammatical structure has, you're writing in Chinese, but you're doing it with like English grammar.
Kind of.
Yeah.
My mom, she can tell that.
Yeah.
But I still feel, people understand me. And yeah.
Okay, because both, and keep in mind I'm at a very low level in Chinese, but both kind of have subject, verb, object construction, kind of.
Yeah. You have a lot of clauses in English, but in Chinese, I haven't studied Chinese grammar very well. I don't know if we have clauses. Yeah, possibly we do, but in an English way. So I can put a long, long sentence in English, but in Chinese probably I'll just cut them out and to split them into different small sentences.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't use a lot of which, that, of which.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I'm glad you brought up punctuation. I have issues with Chinese punctuation, partly because punctuation is overly complicated in English, but I do want more commas in sentences in Chinese, mostly because there's no spaces.
Exactly, that's the hard thing, because you can't tell which one, which character belongs to which, and combines as a word.
Guess where the words are.
I don't know where the words are.
It's like first you find the words, then you find the phrases or the part, the chunks that go together, the lexical chunks. And you're like, okay, so those go together and that goes, and then you've got a period. The only thing I see is a period most of the time. I'm like, okay, that sentence is over, but look at all that stuff in that sentence.
That comes very handy when you read pinyin, I think. They would group things together.
Yeah, but nobody reads pinyin.
Really?
I mean, do they? Do you ever read in pinyin?
When I was very young, yes.
Yeah, but that's only to learn the language. You don't stay in that interlanguage or...
Yeah, but if you walk on the street, the signs and the labels, they should group everything, right?
They're in pinyin with no accents. There's no tones on the streets. Yeah. Shanghai, why? Actually, it's all of China. It's not just in Shanghai. Okay, China, why?
Probably it looks better without all the weird intonation.
With all of the... There's five tones. Without knowing the right tone... I mean, again, talk fast and use third tone, you'll be okay. Okay, fine, but what? There's no tone. So it's kind of in pinyin, but kind of not, because...
Yeah, without tone,
It's kind of Romanized for people who aren't going to use the language.
They're way more complicated.
Way more complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Finnish... punctuation or...
No, I'm not that stage yet.
Okay. They do have quite long words, I've heard.
Oh, yeah. Same as German.
That's true. Yeah. Agglomerative language? Is that what they are? They, like, put more things on the end of the word to...
I think so.
Yeah. Turkish is like that, too. Some of the words are, like, this long.
Very, very logical, though.
Very, very logical.
Yeah.
Italian. Why Italian?
Just lots of friends are Italian recently.
That's right, because you haven't been to Italy yet.
Not yet.
Oh my gosh, you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
And I've learned a little bit of Latin previously, so probably picking Italian wouldn't be that hard.
Mm-mm. It won't be.
But still a bit hard.
Yeah, and there's definitely, oh my gosh, there's definitely different dialects and different speeds of speaking it, depending on where you go. Sure, you have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 languages at your disposal. Do you want to learn any more in the future?
I really want to master the one I've been learning at the moment.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That's
crazy. I still have a long way in my German.
Yeah.
And Italian, I just picked it up recently, so it's Finnish.
We talked a little bit about fluency before and feeling comfortable in a language. Mm-hmm. How do you know when you get to fluency? What does that feel like? What does that sound like? For you, because it's a very personal thing.
I don't really know, actually, because I feel like there's still lack of confidence when I'm presenting paper and when I'm writing academic things, and whenever I want to write something, do some writing, proper writings in another foreign language. My supervisor is very old school. I love him. I really love him, but he's really, really old school professor. He taught me, Phoebe, you have to really articulate your thoughts better. I have confidence in you, but it takes time, so you still have room to improve. He corrected a lot of my grammar mistakes and the expressions as well. So now I've become kind of... Previously, I was very anxious. I really want to rush and then... force myself to. I'm actively seeking ways to improve my language skills and when I can actually reach the stage of fluency, but right now I'm just, I don't know, take time and then really pay attention to a piece of writing I really, really like,
yeah.
and then learn a little bit of from that, and then probably when I encounter another one I appreciate and learn a little bit from that.
Mm-hmm.
If you are more tolerant, if you love yourself better, then everything becomes better. If you force yourself, I have to reach that stage at some time,
mm-hmm.
You're really killing yourself.
You do, yeah. Because the stress just blocks out all learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely,
yeah.
yeah.
And the fluency, spoken ones, it really depends on what I'm talking about and whom I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk to you because you made me at least. You made me feel really, really comfortable. But I still get very nervous.
Yeah.
And I found it hard to articulate myself in very formal settings.
Yeah.
I can't, I don't know, use a proper, think of a proper word.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on person.
Sure.
So we really have chemistry here.
Yes, we do. Because you seem so incredibly eloquent. And
thanks.
And I can't at all sense any lack of confidence going on at all.
I do very often.
No, I hear you. Oh, I hear you. Hey, look, I grew up with serious language shame. So I grew up with immigrant parents who everybody looked down upon, and they put that condescension on us as kids, and I was a very, very sensitive child. I'm still a sensitive person, but I'm no longer a child. I had that kind of on me, and I was always very self-conscious,
mm-hmm.
because they already thought less of me because of my parents, which was ridiculous. So anything I was going to say, they were going to critique more. So I was very, very self-conscious, and I initially went into books as an escape, but then I loved them. And I was like, I don't care why, I'm a book person. I love books. I love learning. I love reading. I love the different worlds that are in them, people's ideas. I love them. But initially it was because I couldn't communicate in other ways. And that's kind of why I started writing and all this kind of stuff. So I grew up incredibly shy, incredibly unable to speak. When we had to do speeches in school, I would be physically ill. Like it was actually teaching that helped me get over that and realize how many mistakes most people made, and it just didn't matter. Yeah. But I was an awful, awful, awful speaker the vast majority of my life.
Really?
In the only language that I had. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, it's all about practice.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just using it constantly and not being, like you said, not being like caught up on perfect.
Right, yeah.
Because that just doesn't exist.
Because that standard is, I don't know, you just brought it in by yourself and it's not even logical.
And nobody has it. Nobody. I love when you see like bloopers on TV or in like in podcasts, some people put bloopers where it's like the mistakes, and you hear these very eloquent people and they're like, and they say things really goofy and you're like, they made a mistake too. And it makes me feel so good because it's like, yeah, everybody makes mistakes. We're just, again, like you said, language is such a difficult representation of what we're thinking.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, there's all this in here in our brains, and it has to come through this tiny little funnel.
Right.
And it's so difficult.
Language is a very dynamic and organic thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I was studying in Ireland, I found a lot of brilliant, talented
mm-hmm.
Italian researcher, mm-hmm. French researcher, whose first language is not English, but everybody has to discuss everything in English.
Right.
If you just focus on the fluency of language, it'll block you out.
Yeah.
You'll become blinded. Their proficiency will be blocked if you focus on the language too much.
You really have to pick. Do we want to keep the conversation going, or do we want to point out every mistake and forget what we're talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly, yeah. And in a lot of TV series, a lot of the directors, they intentionally hire or recruit actors or actresses
mm-hmm.
who can do a certain accent,
mm-hmm.
a German accent or a French accent, because they found it interesting or sexy. They want people to have those,
yeah.
an authentic kind of way of expression. They want the multicultural element within their production.
That's a really good point. So we're comfortable with other languages, but we're not comfortable with other versions of our own language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Why are we like this? Yeah, because we do look upon certain language, people who have certain accents as being sexier or being stricter or being more mysterious or But so it's kind of funny. But within the language, we want one standard, but nobody speaks that standard. We're crazy, crazy human beings.
Let's leave that standard to robotics.
Exactly!
I can easily synthesize any standardized.
Yeah. Oh, but that's it. We want that standard. But when it's coming from an actual robot, we're offended that they're speaking our language. And we're like, I don't want a robot to take care of me. Why not? If they do it better without X, Y, and Z, then who cares? Like, yeah. It's complicated. It's so complicated. Okay, I think I know the answer to this, and I think the listeners probably know anyway, but I'll ask, what is your favorite part of languages? What about languages do you like the most?
You mean me personally?
Yeah.
How it sounds.
I knew it. I knew it. Didn't you know that? I know.
Did you get it right?
It's like what, Stephanie, did you not hear the other hour of the conversation? I'm just checking, because sometimes it could be, you know, there could be two. Okay, and the flip of that, what's your least favorite part of languages?
Personally, writing.
We are completely opposite.
I really, really love writing.
Yeah.
But I found writing very painful for me. Because I have to pay more attention to the grammar and things. There are different ways of writing, but I'm very strict to myself.
Yeah.
So when it comes to writing, I wouldn't be very fluent. I would be slower, because I think a lot more.
And by writing, do you mean writing by hand, typing, or both?
Either way.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I simply want probably because I stay in academic for too long.
Yeah.
I really like the flow of my mind. I used to just lent everything out, but my supervisor would always pick out things for me to correct.
Oh, sure. But that's what writing, that's the advantage of writing, is you get to go back, you get to get your ideas out, and then go back and make them pretty.
Yeah, so when it comes to writing, I would just have to put higher standard and stricter requirements. So for me, writing is more mentally, the mental load is heavier for me.
That makes sense. Even in Chinese?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was thinking,
sound good.
Oh.
It's not only delivering an idea, because it's something you will retain and then probably people will read it. So you really have to think about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rephrase things and then just try to make their life easier. If I speak or talk, then I just, whatever.
Yeah. It is easier to see mistakes or to see things that don't connect when it's in written form. It's easier to find those holes in language and it's in that form.
Yeah, if it's personal diary, it's fine. Mm-hmm. If it's something that I will make public, then I spend a lot more effort.
Yeah. I can see that. Because I asked you about handwriting versus typing because, as a non-native speaker of, or non-native writer of Chinese, I can type basic stuff if I know the word with using the pinyin input. But handwriting-wise, I know I'm never going to spend that time.
Aww.
I can do some things, and I make my you can see some flashcards behind you. Like, I make the flashcards. But generally speaking, I don't have the time left in my life to write 100 times for each character, a few times a week, that kind of thing. I just, priorities, blah, blah, blah. I'm old.
You can use voice to text. You can just talk to your phone and then let it transcribe it.
Oh, no. I actually like typing it. I like the type. I think it's when I could actually type it out in pinyin and pick the character and see that I did that, that was a big day for me.
Wow.
I was like, that's amazing, because that looks like kind of like coding to me. That looked like, I'm good. it feels nice to be able to do that. Again, 300, 400 words, so that's very limited, but it feels fun to do that. I like writing in that way.
When I was learning English, I really like writing tycoons in English, even though I got very limited vocabulary.
Wow.
Just love playing around with words and don't pay attention to the grammar, because I just want it to sound beautiful.
So on the podcast, we have two giant populations of people. People that grew up with English and learned Mandarin Chinese, and people that grew up with Mandarin Chinese and learned other languages. Mm-hmm. Keeping both of those populations in mind, what other questions should I ask people? What's missing? What do you want to know from them, from future guests?
What's their way of improving their language when it gets to the stage they couldn't improve from taking a proper class?
Oh, that is the million-dollar question. It's so hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm in the bottleneck of my language study. I don't know because I've done all the courses I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And still, my supervisor pointed out a lot of mistakes I make, or I still, my articulation or the expression is not the most efficient, or people still get confused of what I said. So, how should I improve? If I always ask my friend, a native speaker, oh, could you correct my CV? Could you look through my 30-page essay, which comes out every couple of months? I feel like, wow, I'm just making use of my friends. I'm not going to do that.
The language learning answer is, I haven't gotten there yet. The teacher answer, the former teacher answer is, you've kind of already answered it a little bit, is looking at similar things. If you're talking about writing a CV, looking at a lot of CVs.
Yeah.
If you're talking about like the essays you're writing, reading a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody, like if your professor points out things that you are doing, pick one thing that you're doing a lot that's wrong, one thing that you're doing repeatedly, and go and look for that in like things and see how they're doing it. And read a ton of those. And then very slowly incorporate that into your writing. But it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
The third answer is to have an editor of some sort, is to have like a private tutor or a language exchange partner, which is really hard because most of those aren't very focused. Language exchanges are very slippery.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. So if you can afford it, a tutor, if the school that you're at has like language exchanges, that might be more direct, more... Yeah, less slippery of a way.
I tried a couple from college services, and right now, at this stage, your requirement is really, really high. Somebody has to be able to tell where you come from, and you just can't stop asking them why. But some of the questions, they couldn't explain why.
Yeah.
But those people, they should be able to tell you're coming from a background who's learned English grammar.
Right.
So if I'm able to explain everything within the system you're familiar with, then they will adopt that system. If not, they just ask you, oh, I'll just remember that.
Yeah.
But I don't like the answer, just remember it.
But sometimes there isn't a reason why. There are new, that's the thing, that the language evolved because of mistakes, because English had a lot of immigrants coming into the language using the language, and as the children would misuse the language, those mistakes would work their way into the language, and now they're rules. And so they seem illogical because they are illogical, but that's the way they are. Yeah.
So if a person who knows that history can explain everything well, then probably will be more convinced, but really, I should really tackle my own barrier of asking deeply why.
Yeah, well, I want to know the same thing about Chinese. The fu, the one that looks like a big B.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't seem to do anything. It was one of the first questions I had, and I still, going back to my old videos, I don't understand why it's there. It's not adding sound-wise most of the time. It doesn't add meaning. I know it's generally a more formal or historical word, I think. But it doesn't, like, why is that there? And I still want to know why. But I don't know if anybody knows the answer. Do you know the answer to that?
I'll talk about that after.
No! No! Is it too...
I want to give you a responsible answer because I know.
See? But you know when to use it. You know how to read it.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother you that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
It is a thorn in my side.
I would say so.
It's one of those things that I get caught up on, and I want to know why. I want to know why. Not enough to spend years researching online or keep asking people, because I stopped asking, because most people said, I don't know. I just use it. And that's part of, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard answer to take, though. Just is.
Probably the first step is to accept there's difference, and then there's situations that wouldn't give you correct answer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But it's really difficult. When you want to use the language in a way where people don't get distracted by how you're using it, you want them to understand your ideas.
Right.
It's hard not to want to understand everything that you're using.
If we talk to people genuinely, if another person is a genuine person as well, then language isn't a barrier at all.
For most people.
Yes.
There are some people where it is. Some people will be mean about language. Yes. And I want to tell them something I can't do right now. I don't want to offend Phoebe, not because I don't curse on the podcast. I know. Those people make me very angry. Because it's like communication is the point.
Right, right.
And the snobbery in language, in language usage, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Mimicking a language or getting proficiency in one language simply because I want to show respect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not my ultimate goal. The goal is to deliver what I want.
Exactly.
Thinking.
Exactly.
And contribute to a wider society.
Yeah.
Not the native English speaker only, a wider society.
Exactly. Well, a native English speaker is such a weird term. It's like, okay, we grew up with it. There are a lot of native English speakers who are not skillful using the language. It's not a goal. I can turn on YouTube right now and show you a lot of native English speakers that you do not want to sound like. There's a lot of non-skillful people. Just because you grow up with a language doesn't mean you're good at using it. So yeah, so the long answer is constantly reading and comparing it to how you're using it. And it takes a lot of time. Once you reach that high level that you're at, getting better is really intense and very time consuming.
Yeah.
Cool. Because, okay, the universities I taught at in the U.S., there were writing centers. Mm-hmm. There was one for the undergraduates and one for the graduate students. Does your university have any centers like that?
No, not exactly in the university I went to.
Okay.
But in my current research center, they provide services similar to that.
Okay.
That's something I've been actively seeking throughout the years.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't find enough support.
Right.
I really need somebody who knows language well. But it's really, really hard for foreign students.
It is. It is. Right. At the last university I went to, we had tutors specifically for second language learners in the graduate program.
We only have a volunteer, either student or faculty members, to provide some of their, like, just as a volunteer, give you some comments, but they wouldn't spend time doing very detailed, give you help or language help. This is really, really time-consuming. When I'm correcting people's writing in Chinese, their CV and their like cover letter, the sentences just sound wrong. When I want to correct it, there are numerous ways I can correct. Not correct, I always say rephrase it. I couldn't do that over email. I have to really sit down. If I'm responsible enough, I have to sit down asking what you want to emphasize on and where you're coming from. Then I would find a proper sentence or a paraphrase for that, for all the sentences or expressions that sounds not natural.
Right.
I really have to sit down. If you just pinpoint the weird ones and then just replace it, it's not very responsible. But it takes so much time and effort.
It's incredibly time consuming.
Right. Yeah.
I'm surprised they don't have hired graduate students to do that. Like for ours, we were in the English department.
Yeah.
And so they had varying levels of tutoring available where they paid us to go and do these things. But maybe it's something you can suggest to them.
Yeah, possibly.
But I'm actually looking up online. One of the women I worked for, Elena Cotes, she had a few different computer programs, and that's not the right word, but she had a few different programs to identify. Have you heard of like moves and steps within academic writing? Like there's certain transitions in academic papers that you have, like you're supposed to do your introduction here.
Yeah.
Then you have to state your
arguments.
Yeah, your arguments, and then you have to build on somebody else's research, so you have to do your lit review here, and then you have to do this part here, this part here. At the end, you have to say what's wrong with your study.
Yeah.
You know, you have to just fess up to your mistakes. And so there's those things, but there's moves, there's certain elements in language that are called moves and steps that you have to do to maneuver from one part to another. And so she did a program that basically color codes these different ones. And part of it used to, it's been a couple of years now, but part of it used to be available online where you could put your text in there and it would sort it out and kind of tell you what's missing, what has too much of it kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
I'm going to hunt for it and send it. If it's still available online, I'll send it to you.
Thanks.
But it was a really cool, very, very cool thing that she did. I loved looking at that. I like using language, but I also like seeing like the similarities within a genre.
Yeah.
And I think that's fun.
Yeah, people have different takes on languages. A lot of my colleagues right now, because we are all engineers and scientists, they just want to use the language good enough to deliver the thoughts and the scientific findings to make the paper efficient.
Yeah.
And my goal always, I always want to write something functional or informative at the same time pleasing to read.
Right.
That's my goal.
What was really fun is the department we were in, because it was like part English language teaching, or it wasn't English language teaching, it was part language teaching, part technology, is we were reading second language acquisition-ish kind of paper, academic papers, and then we were reading computer science papers. Oh my god, those were so much fun. Like the language ones were very highfalutin. They were very, you know, brain scratchy and very formal. Yeah. And then the computer science ones, especially the machine learning ones and those kinds of things, which I did a little bit of and not really that much, they were delightful. People had a sense of humor. They were shorter. They were to the point. They were clear. I was like, can we have more of these? Am I in the wrong department? Man, they were so great. So the difference between the two is huge.
Yes.
Yeah. So of the papers that you need to write, what's the feel of those papers? What is the, what are the characteristics of that?
I would personally prefer the second one.
Yeah.
But I think currently, the team I'm working at would look for the first one.
More formal. Yeah. More traditional academic. Yeah. That is the majority. But oh my gosh, the other one was so... I've never seen
anything like that. It's objective when we're scientists.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really appreciate the very delightful, clever paper written by general scientists.
Yeah.
For the lay audience. That's something...
It was awesome.
That's something That's something will make you feel happy because you really popularize your own research to wider public.
Oh, sorry. Let me clarify. That wasn't for a popular audience. It was still in academia.
But still, it brings...
But it was a different department. It was more computer science. Yeah. No, it was... And it was more succinct. Instead of it being 15, 20 pages long.
Yeah.
And really having to dig for the main information because they kind of overly formally write, it was very succinct.
Yeah.
And there were more charts and graphs and pictures and things to explain stuff. Yeah. And then there was just thought experiments. It was actual data. And it was very, very different. I'm trying to think of what part of computer science that was, and I do not... I can't remember. I've blocked it all out. It was quite a while ago. But it was definitely something... It was language related. It was probably natural language processing-ish stuff within computer science.
NLP.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what we were doing. Yeah. We were giving a test on one thing, but we were really researching their language as they were writing stuff. It's like, oh, this isn't manipulative at all. But they got, you know, research studies. People get certain... I think they got something from... I don't remember. Blah, blah, blah. It's like a lifetime ago. But anyway, okay, so your question, let me read your question back to you, see if I got it how you meant it. What's your way of improving language when you've reached the top level of classes available?
Is that part of.
Part of? Okay, what's missing?
And how long would it take?
Forever.
No.
Sorry.
That's very discouraging.
I know. Not for me because, I already know it's going to take the rest of my life to get a second language. One of the gentlemen that came on here, he's an American man who's been studying Mandarin Chinese. He's been using it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And he said he knew in the first couple of years that it was a marriage. He had to commit. He's like, I'm not stopping. He's like, I'm just going to go. Every week he has his online tutoring session, no matter where he is in the world. And he travels a lot. He was working in Shanghai in a corporate environment in Chinese. Mm-hmm. He writes all the time in Chinese. He speaks. Yeah. He uses Chengyu's. I mean, he's got a high level of language. But he says he still feels like he has 20 more years to go, 30 more years to go. So it's like
really modest.
Well, and I think the more you know about anything, the more you know you don't know. And I think language is also like that.
Oh, now it just made me think of two more questions.
Go for it.
The second one.
Yeah.
It's related to my own experience. I want to ask some other people about in what situation would your fluency change? Because I really actually imagined when I'm facing you, I can speak everything fluently. I wouldn't think about the mistakes I would make and the non-proper usage of words. It's not a concern at all. But in some other situations, I would just stop and then say sorry to the audience. Sorry, I can't pick up a word and blah, blah, blah. That times happened a lot of times. It happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if anybody else.
That's an amazing question. I'm really surprised that nobody's added that before now. Wow.
Or it could be my own.
No. That's a really, really interesting question. Does
the fluency fluctuate?
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Does it fluctuate in your first languages too? Or just in
Chinese. My Chinese deteriorated a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back very quickly, but just depends on the situation.
And if I'm not, like, if I'm just by myself for a while and then I'm talking to someone, it'll take me a little while to kind of warm up.
Mm-hmm.
Language-wise also. So even just in that situation. But okay, so I wrote down, does your level of fluency change in different situations?
Yes.
Okay. Listeners, if you have any questions you want me to add to the question list, please feel free to contact me, stephfuccio@gmail.com. My information's in the show notes.
Do people think achieving fluency in spoken language is very important? Because I felt a lot of people... a lot of people felt really happy without investing a lot of time on languages. They live happily in another country. As long as they understand what the others are talking about, they're happy about their language skills. Care how fluent, how the vocabularies, the volume of their vocabularies.
Yeah.
They don't really care as long as people understand each other. Even if they permanently switch to another country,
right,
they still live happily.
So is it about knowing other languages, or is it about speaking versus writing or reading or
listening? I would say, well, a lot of people study English until the stage of good enough, like 3,000 words of vocabulary. If they can live there without problem, it's fine. Then they will cease taking classes and paying attention to all the grammar or learning new vocabularies.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to beautify things.
Right.
If they can explain everything in four sentences, they don't want to shrink it down to one sentence or use a clever word or the exact word that describes what they are.
So is it fluency or is it beautification? Because it feels like there's two big parts to that question. It feels like there's a part about language curiosity in general.
Yeah.
And then it feels like there's a part about language skills.
I would say it's more about language curiosity.
Curiosity, okay.
Yeah. For daily life, language skills is like, I don't know, it's a necessity. But beyond that, would people pursue a higher level of language?
Because the people that I'm going to be interviewing are interested in languages.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be in front of me if they weren't. So do you want to know why they're interested? Why they want to keep working on it?
I think so.
Okay.
Why do people perceive a higher language proficiency when they've got the basic skills?
Mm-hmm. You are hired as my question writer. Sold! Well, oh my gosh. Seriously, Phoebe, you've given me a lot to think about, and I'm sure a lot for the listeners to think about.
Ain't it sad that you've never seen just how beautiful life can be? In fact, if I had to make a call, I'd say you never seen yourself at all. Just a flaw here and a flaw there when you're standing in your underwear. Girl, you don't have to buy anything. Confidence has always been free. But I can see you alone in a room, wearing nothing but some sweet perfume. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose your body blues. Well, you're so hot and you don't even know it. Girl, I love what you got, gonna teach you to show it. If you're done with the lies, see yourself through my eyes. You've paid your dues, say goodbye to your body blues. Well, I know that you wanna be free from the shackles of the bourgeoisie. And as a working man, I have to propose. You leave the prison of your pretty clothes. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose. Your body blooms. Well, you're so hot and you don't even know it. Girl, I love what you got, gonna teach you to show it. If you're done with the lies, see yourself through my eyes. You paid your dues, say goodbye to your body blues. Yeah, there's no fear, 'cause I'm